this is Angela Middleton, and welcome to my podcast called I Want to BA. The reason for this podcast is that there is a huge lack of careers advice in the UK, and I'm always asked by young people, by parents and by teachers, my views on improving careers advice, and particularly by parents, what should they say to their youngster who's leaving school. I think it is a wider subject. It's not just about what job do you want to do, but it is actually about how you want your life to be. And within that, what type of career you want to select. And that career can just be the first stepping stone. Nowadays, individuals have a whole portfolio of careers. The people that I've interviewed, even at the age of 30, have had four or five careers. Myself, I've had at least five different types of careers. So this podcast is about firstly talking about careers in general and careers advice, but secondly, bringing in individuals who have experienced careers in particular industries, hence the subject I Want to BA, and they can come and talk about the path that they took to actually get to where they are, and also talk about what it's like to actually do that job and have that career. So we'll be covering every type of career that we can think of in the UK, and it will be everything from architects to zoologists. So I'll look forward to comments, and we'll build things up as we go along, and hopefully it should be of great use to parents, to teachers and to young people. Today I have Artie Singer with us. Artie is a director for investor relations for National Grid, a huge organisation which has a 25 billion capitalisation and is high up on the FTSE index. And she's responsible for all investor relations, which is essentially responsible for all communications about the performance of the business. And whatever those communications are can have major repercussions on the valuation of the company. So it really is quite high pressure and an extremely important role. Artie was born in India, in New Delhi, and went to a school of 2,000 students. And it was later in her career where she moved across to the UK and has then sort of gone from strength to strength, really. I met her at a course that we both attended with the Confederation of British Industry, and it's been an absolute pleasure to have some conversations with Artie, and I'm really delighted that she's been able to join us today. So Artie, thanks so much for joining us, and I would love to hear first of all your journey from when you were at school through to your role now. Just give us a bit of a potted history.
Sure. So I was born and brought up in India, went to school in India, and came to the UK in the year 2000. As you can imagine, India is a very fiercely competitive background, and went to co-education school back there.
And it was quite a big school, wasn't it?
I had about, I think, over 2,000 people, 2,000 students in the school, very dynamic environment.
Equal boys and girls? Or?
I think a little bit more boys, but, you know, fairly balanced.
And how were you at school?
I think I was a good student, pretty social, particularly active in extracurricular activities, very artistic. I did a lot of dance and dramatics in school. That was a real source of energy for me when I was at school. Did reasonably well in academics, ended up being the first girl school captain for the school.
So leadership traits right at the beginning, it seems like.
I don't know about that, but it was good. I enjoyed the experience in school. Then did my graduation from Delhi University. And while I was studying, I also worked at the same time for an energy company that was trying to set up its base in India. They were trying to develop new power generation assets in a high demand. You know, there's a lot of demand for energy in India. So I had a really good work experience with my graduation, which was in accounts and commerce.
And before we sort of talk about that in too much detail, I just wanted to explore your background a little bit more. Did you come from a large family?
Relatively small in the context of India. So I've got two brothers. So we're three altogether siblings. My dad was a pilot in the Indian Air Force, and my mum worked for the lower house of parliament. So very hardworking middle class family.
And did you do much work experience whilst you were actually at school?
I think in those days we had less opportunities to do work experience. Mm-hmm. Also remember, this is before the internet happened.
Yes, of course.
So, you know, the types of opportunities I think that kids get these days just didn't exist back then.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, I was in a progressive school, which, did encourage students to find opportunities to where they could kind of broaden their skill set. And I wouldn't call it work experience, but education was a big focus, trying to educate people who couldn't read or write. Mm-hmm. And so in senior school, you did have opportunities to help people learn how to read and write. So I did try to do that where possible.
Interesting. So you were actually sort of involved in communications even then.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. As part of sort of dramatics and events, you do get exposure to that side.
Very much, yeah. You then joined this British company stationed in India.
Yeah.
And you quickly became sort of very popular there at that company.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it was a fantastic experience. Lots and lots and lots of hard work, but a brilliant exposure as well. And so this company was trying to set up its base in India. It was the kind of core India office, but a very small one. And when you work in a small company or a small setup, then you basically you're a jack of all. You do have to, if you have an IT problem, you solve it yourself. You know, any issue that comes up, you just have to get on with it and deal with it.
And interesting then, so you weren't really necessarily pursuing a corporate career at this point. You were working for what appeared to be a relatively small company at that point.
It was relatively small, and I did keep my media interests alive outside as well. So I did some comparing and VJing for some music channels. So I was always trying to do something that had a connection to marketing and communications in one way or the other.
Yes.
And you are right, I did not expect to be pursuing a career in energy at that stage.
No.
But it all worked out well, because in that role, you know, you had to work with people at various different levels within the organization. So in terms of your ability to interact with very senior and very junior people, it gave a fantastic opportunity to mix with a wide range of people.
And because you were successful there and very hardworking, that led to the next opportunity, didn't it?
Yes, it did. So it was really, serendipity, really, the way things worked out as it happened. I got married and we were relocating to England, had worked for the British company. They knew me. And so I applied for a role in the London office, and I got it. And that's really where the London journey started.
And tell us then about some of the different roles that you did from when you were in London.
So from when I was in London, at first I did a junior support role in investor relations. At a time when the business was going through a huge amount of volatility and change, we had a very, very international management team. So you needed to, alongside, you know, working very hard, you needed to be very flexible in how you work, and also very fast learner. Mm. This was an environment where somebody who has bags of energy, wants to learn, wants to deliver, you know, would thrive. And the kind of the whole environment really suited to my personality. So I was able to really demonstrate my skills in that environment.
Yes.
And very soon after having come to England, I took on the role of media relations manager for this FTSE 250 company at that time, which was trying to set itself up in London and build a brand. And so that was the first role that I did.
And you then moved on through a number of roles over a period of about 20 years, really, didn't you?
That's right. It was a really fun journey. And I think my favorite stat about it is when I started doing my first investor relations role in this company, our market cap was £1 billion. By the time we got sold, we were worth £23 billion.
Wow.
So it was it was a phenomenal journey. The company's business quadrupled. We were in 30 countries by the time we were eventually fully sold. Very diverse, very international. So it was a really brilliant experience.
Fantastic.
So the media relations manager from there went to investor relations head of investor relations and communications. I did a role in regulation and market design. And then now I'm back again in investor relations.
So That brings us nicely on to your current role. So you are Director for Investor Relations for National Grid. It's a great title. You appear to be very young, you know, to hold such a huge role. I know you're also a mother of children, and so you're very, very busy and probably got lots of demands on your time. So we'll explore some of that as we continue discussing. But tell us, first of all, you know, what that role entails and, you know, some of the things that you get up to on a typical day. You probably don't have a typical day, but, you know, during your general sort of week, let's say.
Yeah. A general week, a general day, like you said, there is no typical day, can be very diverse. We start the week with certain objectives we want to achieve, and then we don't always achieve those objectives because something else has hit us left field that we weren't expecting. So I won't talk about National Grid here. I'll talk just generically about the role and from my experience, not of this role, but of all the roles that I've done in this space on how it can differ. So I think number one aspect of the role is the obligation on disclosure. So the first thing you need to get right is that you are disclosing as and when in a timely fashion and at the same time to all of your institutional and retail investors. So, you know, that is number one. And that's the piece we need to get right at the beginning. And then after that comes the bit of what can we do proactively to make sure that our investors fully understand what we are trying to achieve and how we are trying to achieve it in a very responsible in a very responsible way. So, you know, from the outside, you know, investors need to have a sense of confidence and clarity in the business and in the teams that are delivering for investors. So this gives us the opportunity to do proactive marketing events. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we can pick up a business, say if we have a business in continental Europe, we can organize an event and make sure that we give a lot of exposure to that business so that the market can see how this business generates profitability for shareholders, but also how it does it in a responsible way for employees, for consumers, and for the general public. So I think, you know, it's not just about making money and just highlighting that. It's the how we do it is incredibly important and you know, growing in importance.
And so presumably you have quite a bit of travel during this role. So that's how much travel do you do?
I mean, historically, it's been more sort of much more international. Of late now, I do a lot of trips to the US and some to continental Europe. I think, you know, if you can probably typically once a month, you would expect to be doing some form of travel. And at during times of financial results, you would have to travel much more than that.
And, you know, you are communicating at an extremely high level to presumably very bright people and representing what's going on, you know, at board level of this huge company that you work for. It's a big responsibility. Tell us a bit more about that and maybe some of the challenges associated with that. All the good things.
It is a big responsibility, but you're not alone. Yeah. You know, that is what being part of an organization is. Mm. You need to have the processes, the people, the structure around you that is constantly enabling you to make the right decisions, both for the company and, you know, and for the shareholders. So I don't think any role is too big because it shouldn't be. That's an unsustainable environment if too much is placed upon a single individual. So so in that sense, it's a big role, but there is a lot of support mechanisms around to make sure that collectively the group, the business does the right thing. Mm. So I think where you need to make an effort is to really get into the detail of the business and to try and understand that at a very granular level. Because if you can't understand it, you can't solve it. Mm-hmm. And that's where you need to invest a lot of time is understanding the financial and operational details. But then also on the people side, you really, really need to know the people who are running the business on the ground. So constantly you are juggling between trying to understand deep financial statements alongside meeting with people and really understanding how they're driving the business forward. So it's a really nice combination of both of those aspects.
Yeah, definitely. And do you manage a large team?
It's relatively small. I mean, it's a big team in terms of the sphere that I'm in, but it's not that big. There's six people who report into me. So it's not that huge.
Mm. And do you work long hours?
I work long hours when I need to work long hours. Right. I'm very, I try to be very disciplined about my time. Like you mentioned, I have young kids and I feel that I, you know, owe them quality time as well. So it's always about balancing between giving work, everything. By nature, I have a tendency to be a workaholic and get very energized by my job. So I have to work very hard to stop myself and say, no, now I need to give time to my family. So that's it. Has to be a very consciously, you know, a conscious decision. Mm.
But you're a great example of how, you know, a mother with young children can still be very, very effective in a very high profile corporate, you know, responsible role.
Yeah, I strongly believe it can be done. I know, and ultimately it's about personal choice. Yeah. I think you're a mother yourself, like you, whatever choice you make, if it is to give all your time and commitment to family, brilliant.
Yes.
Or if you try to juggle, brilliant. It's whatever makes you happy.
Yes.
And then I think once you make a choice, you have to be happy with it.
Yes.
And you can't make one choice and be thinking about the other side. You need to kind of tell yourself, this is the decision I'm taking. And in my view, I'm happier this way.
Yes.
So, but then it's obviously very personal for people's, you know,
absolutely,
preferences.
And you are just going back a little bit about the some of the stakeholders involved in this, because when you're actually communicating with, you know, the investors, you are representing this large organization. And I guess, you know, based on the statements that you and your team are producing, the CEO may be standing up and making statements, etc., which must be responsibility and pressure for you. So tell us a bit about that, because I know it will probably sound very exciting to our listeners, but maybe a bit scary as well.
For me, it's exciting.
Yeah.
More exciting than scary. I think that one of the our job is also to present the business and the management team in the best light. And I'm not saying that we have to do things that are try to show them unreasonably in the best light, but you know that's what, you know, what we're trying to achieve is to demonstrate that. And, you know, in terms of the challenge, it's personalities. A lot of the role is about giving people feedback. Because when you're trying to make somebody look good or look their best, you might have to point out things to them where perhaps they're not looking that great.
Yes.
And that's, you know, that's a real, that really is then down to your relationship with the individual in how delicately you can get that across.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And equally, quite often you have to challenge people as well.
Yeah.
And mostly we are dealing with people who are senior to us.
Yes.
And so it's a way of managing projects and people in a very constructive way.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, your people skills are incredibly important.
Yes, as are your finance skills. Because as you say, you've got to understand deep financial statements. And, you know, that doesn't come easily with it. You have to have the academics in order to achieve that.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, tell us a little bit about the sorts of pathways beyond this role. I mean, you've still got, you know, huge future in front of you, having already achieved, you know, pretty high level within your career. So where do you see, not yourself necessarily, but where could this lead to? What sorts of things do people go to after investor relations?
So first off, the role in itself is fantastic.
Yeah.
And I think I know so many people who remain in the function and go from one company to another because it is so exciting. And once you've gained the knowledge, you can, in over time, you can just give a lot more.
Yeah.
I think it does open a lot of doors in the finance function. There are many functions in finance that you are having done this role where you get a real helicopter view of the organization. You can take that knowledge and deep understanding and also the understanding of what your owners or what the owners of the business want to other functions. So, you know, developing yourself within the finance role, maybe even to a chief financial officer, depending on, you know, what opportunities there are, is definitely a path that people can take from this role. There are other adjacent roles that have very similar characteristics. So whether it's in media relations or in corporate affairs, those could be other paths or regulation, in fact, any role that has a requirement to manage a large stakeholder.
Yes.
Investor relations gives you fantastic platform of analytical skills and relationship building skills that, you know, that's a great combination that you can take to any other stakeholder management role. Obviously, if you go into another stakeholder, then you have to understand the dynamics, but the core skills you've got, and you can really transfer them.
And would you say that it is primarily a sort of a corporate career route, or do sometimes people that have got this experience move to smaller businesses or more of an entrepreneurial role, or does it tend to be more corporate?
I think primarily corporate, because investor relations as a function is small but highly, highly visible within the organization. Yes. So if you're looking for visibility, this is... But visibility has its downsides too. If you get it wrong, then you know that. But, you know, I'm half glass full always. Yes. So I think it gives you a lot of visibility. So it's a great place for corporate roles. There are people who have done a lot of years of experience in this who have gone and set up their private sort of their consulting or advisory services. But that's relatively small. And it only happens after many, many, many years of experience in the function.
So for individuals who are sitting listening to us now, and you know, I'm sure there will be lots of them who are really inspired and interested in what you've had to say and wanting to follow in your footsteps. How could they start? What sorts of qualifications might they need? And how do they go about getting their first sort of step on the ladder?
Yeah. If they want to come in and do investor relations as their first role, I think first off, having a financial knowledge is extremely helpful. That together with some sort of communications marketing background is a good combination. Mm-hmm. Typically, people, this is not the first role, and maybe that's because people are just not familiar with what the function does. And and so I think people tend to go for slightly different roles within organizations. I would say definitely have strong financial knowledge. That's a big plus. And then if you've got experience in either any of these other functions that I mentioned, corporate affairs, regulatory affairs, or media relations, all of those are really helpful. Yes. If you start there, then add on finance, but you do need both aspects, really. Yeah.
And would you say that individuals do really need a degree for this?
I would, yeah. Mm. I think it, I mean, if you're trying to improve the probability of success, you do.
Yes.
I mean, if you're already in a career in a company, you can put your hand up and say, look, I'm doing this, but I'm really interested in that. Please tell me what I need to develop in order to get there. You could do it that way. But if you want to come in straight from scratch, I would highly recommend a degree.
And applying on a graduate program.
Yeah. Yes.
If you had decided that maybe for whatever reason a degree is not for you, and you've decided that you want to do an apprenticeship route, what would your views be about transitioning across into investor relations at a later date?
Nothing's impossible. This can definitely be done. Yeah. I think the rule number one is be really, really good at your job.
Yes.
And I think people who are good at their jobs, they just shine. They don't have to work too hard to demonstrate or make themselves popular.
Yes.
It will come through. So the rule number one is whatever job it is, however small, however big, just work very hard, be very sincere, and you will get noticed. Build some experience. Once you've got that experience, you have more of a, you've earned the right to put your hand up and say, look, I don't know this, but I really want to do it.
Yes.
And then you can come in as a junior into the team. I learned a lot of what I've learned through work experience.
Yes.
Nobody comes ready-made.
No, absolutely. And one of the things that you did say was a philosophy you have, which I've heard before, and I so agree with, and it was about under-promising and over-delivering.
Yes. So when you do a role, any role that has anything to do with the market, the equity market, you are effectively under a microscope. For every word you say, every word you write, people pay a lot of attention. So you can't take anything lightly. So in having the practice of doing this role, the golden rule is to always under-promise, over-deliver. Because if you under-deliver, you dilute your credibility in a second.
Mm.
I think it's really, really important not to get carried away and swim out of your depth and say something that you can't pull back.
Yeah.
So, I think that's
a bit of caution.
Extremely...
And I think that actually applies to lots of aspects of life as well, doesn't it? If people want to find out a little bit more detail from you. Where could they reach you?
They can email me. I'm very happy to receive emails.
And what's your email address?
It's rt.singhal@gmail.com.
And could they also access you on LinkedIn?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, and how do we spell your surname?
It's Singhal.
Okay. Artie, thank you so much. You've given us an amazing insight. Certainly inspiring for me, and I'm sure lots of our followers as well. So no doubt there'll be lots more applicants for investor relations from now on.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thanks for your time.